Look, you know, I don't know how much, hopefully you appreciate the unique things that this ministry does, okay? And we don't do it so that you'll be all impressed with us. We do it because it's needed. But how much you appreciate, you know, the accessibility this ministry has. I'm not saying there's no ministries out there that are accessible as accessible as we are, but probably not many, okay? I mean, I can tell you when I drove around this town 12 years ago looking for a church that would rent us a building like a gym or something they had just so we could have services on Saturday, we went on like a Wednesday. Not a single church had anybody at the building. Nobody was there. In the middle of the afternoon, you could come here. There'll be somebody here all day, normal working out. We're here every day. There's people here every day available to serve. When you call, you get somebody on the phone most of the time. If you get a voicemail, we listen to the voicemails. And by the way, if you get the voicemail and don't want to leave voicemail, just wait a few minutes and call back. Maybe the person you were trying to reach happened to be doing something else at that moment or on another call or whatever. Just call back. We are the most accessible, okay? Absolutely. And I don't see a lot of congregations where the leadership and the teachers take questions to the level we do. But yet, I know everybody has questions. And by the way, for all of you out there, I'm going to smack you right now. So get ready for the smack. Here it comes. Ready? Slow motion. Okay? Look, don't try to make some argument in my face that you don't need teachers and then you have questions. Okay? That doesn't fly in the same, it just doesn't make any sense. Don't tell me that the Ruach teaches you, you don't need a teacher, we don't need a pastor, we don't need a rabbi, we don't need all, but why do you have questions then? Where are you supposed to get those answers from? See, if that was true, you would just pray, the Ruach would give you the answer, you would never need anything. But yet you do, which proves it doesn't work that way, okay? Maybe I'll say what Elder said that I said this morning. We'll see. The point is, when we're looking at scriptural things, I did a teaching called Learn and Teach the Torah, which, by the way, was actually an argument for teachers teaching the Torah, not for you to teach it necessarily, okay? And you need to understand, as we go through the questions today, the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation was designed and written in parable language, in allegorical language, in all kinds of different language other than just straightforward language. Some of it's in straightforward language, but there's a lot of it that's not straightforward. You know, Yeshua says, Yahweh says, both in the Old Testament, Yeshua says in the New Testament, says about speaking in parables. Why do they speak in parables? The Father and the Son. Why do they speak in parables? Because the intention is that you would need someone to teach you. That's the structural setup that they use so that someone can explain. So he would give a parable, and then his disciples would say, please explain to us. And then he would explain. Because they're supposed to be instructed information. It's supposed to be information that you get instructed in. Yes, you can understand basics in here, a good amount of the history that's in here, a lot of things you can understand without a teacher. But what about that big chunk in here that you can't? So all of you out there that are all like, well, we don't need a teacher. We don't need anybody as a rabbi. We don't need anybody in front of the room. We don't need... Okay, then stop asking questions. Oh, and by the way, stop looking on the internet for 57 different videos to answer your question. Because that's the same thing. Okay? I mean, if you don't need a teacher, you don't need a teacher. Stop being a hypocrite. I said this a long time ago. There was a group that attacked me as part of their little teaching they did on YouTube. And their whole point was that they don't need a teacher. And they said, well, there's a rabbi that we all know, blah, 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 whatever. And they were picking on me. And so for half an hour, they were eviscerating and just attacking the need for leadership and a teacher and rabbis and all that kind of stuff. And then you know what they did for the last hour? Answered everybody's questions. I was like, you freaking hypocrites. I mean, you incredible hypocrites. You just told everybody they don't need a teacher, you have the Ruach, and you're going to sit there and answer questions for an hour. What? And you guys will sit there going and not see that it's hypocrisy. Stop fighting it. It's not like you're an idiot. It was not designed for you to understand fully, not that you can't understand any of it, but fully without a teacher. He designed it that way. I'm not just making that up. He actually says it. He says it was designed in parable language. The revealed, it says, belongs to you. The hidden belongs to him. The secret belongs to him. But how do you get the revealed? Oh, through anointed voices who speak for him and reveal. Okay? So as we go into this Q&A session, realize that's why I do this, is because you have questions. And this is like what happened with Moses. You're going to seek Yah's answers, and you're going to the anointed appointed that you have been sent to. Okay? Hoping to hear his answers to your questions. And so that's why we do this every month, three times a month, so we cover all of the time zone ranges of the whole world. So we make sure they're covered. This morning we did that for the people that live in like Africa, the UK, Europe, etc., in that range of time zones. Next Friday we'll be doing the ones all out further, towards Asia. So we'll do the Philippines and New Zealand and Australia and Japan and Singapore and Indonesia and Malaysia and all of that. And now we're doing here the ones that are kind of the Eastern to Pacific time, U.S., Canada, Mexico, South, Central America, and that kind of thing. Now, of course, it's such a big zone, we separate out letting you guys here locally ask questions 1 month, and the next month is all you guys out there on live stream land, TV land, as my wife said. Okay? But I just want to make sure that we're setting this up correctly. Okay? All right. We're going to begin here with John Conybeare.
There's been some things popping up on me I just didn't understand. For example, I showed one of our video clips to one of my supervisors, and they said, "You mean you have black people serving in your services?" I said, "Yeah, why not? They're there." So I don't seem to understand where this racism is coming. I mean, I'm black, I'm colorblind when it comes to race and the area and that, but I just don't understand why other people are, and I guess can't understand why people keep asking those questions. Now, it came from a black person, too.
All right, look. There's always, we'll give Hasatan credit here, okay? From an adversarial point of view, there needs to be an us versus them, okay? And there's lots of ways we can separate people into us versus them. You could do it by nation, us, our nation versus that nation. We could do it by color. This is one of the things that's been done throughout history, okay? We could do it by belief systems. We could do it by culture. We could do it by so many different ways. We could do it male, female. As a matter of fact, you can see in the history of the U.S. here locally especially, that over the last, say, 10 years or so, especially of late, they've tried every possible way to try to bait us into an us versus them. Okay? And, excuse me, and that's never going to end. See, I don't understand the racism. I was raised on a block in New York City that had everybody that you can imagine from every different culture, every different color, every belief system on one block, okay? It was like the international mishmash, okay? So I never saw anything as that way. My parents didn't raise me to see anything that way. But culturally, people get raised into these prejudices, okay? And by the way, you can get prejudices within the same little bigger category into smaller categories, all right? You get a lot of fighting, like you could take the Serbs and the Croatians back a little while back, but they look very similar. You could take some of the, how many genocides are going on now in Africa? Skin color's all the same. How many fights do you see in the Middle East between, say, Shia and Sunni? Skin color's the same, okay? So I'm saying is it's not always about skin color, but it is one of the categories that gets leveraged to try to create an us-them thing. And the other part of it is we don't want to take responsibility, so we have to have somebody to blame. So we're going to blame that nation or that colored person, the skin color, whatever, that race, that belief system. We're going to blame. That's what happened in Germany, you know, as we led into World War II. They were blaming the Jews for everything. So the Jews became the scapegoat. Okay? And people can say, well, blacks are the scapegoat. Now they're saying whites are the scapegoat. So now we have this whole white, so whites are getting attacked. So let's attack everybody. It doesn't matter. Now we're going to blame immigrants. We're going to blame this. We're going to keep pointing the finger always away from us. And so we live in a world since the beginning of the world where that's the way it is. We always try to point at and blame that which is not us. Whatever we're going to identify ourselves as, is it by skin color, is it by culture, is it by nation, is it by whatever, okay? Look, there was a time when we were dealing with, in the 60s especially, where young people were at adversary against older people. I mean, it was a real big thing. I don't trust anybody over 40. That was like a big thing, right? And so then we have this sort of age now thing that's a battle, okay? So where, and by the way, I think the youth of today has a real problem with this, where they basically blame all of us older people for the world that they're in that they think sucks. So we ruined it for them. The fact that they're ruining it for themselves is, you can't bring that up. We did that, you know. So when you don't understand it, John, you're normal. Nobody, I mean, if you're sane and normal and rational, you will look at this and not understand it, okay? Because by the way, I see good people and bad people as people. And you know what? Some of them have dark skin. Some of them have light skin. Some of them have in-between skin. Some of them are old. Some of them are young. Some of them are from this country. Some are from another country. They're stupid people in all of those categories and smart people in all those categories. There are good ones and bad ones. Stop blocking people by these arbitrary categories. It's really, really destructive to you as a person. Okay? Look, I believe that the creator of the universe made me. So what, I'm going to believe he didn't make you? If your skin's black, he made you. Your skin's white, he made you. Your skin's yellow, he made you. Whatever mix of color. He made all of us. Okay, if you're from Europe, if you're from Africa, you're from India, you're from Asia, you're from the U.S., you're from South. He made everybody. Stop bringing it into some sort of arbitrary, you know, line that makes us versus them. Now, some will say, oh, but he tells us to be set apart. That's not for an us versus them. Okay, that's for an us inspiring them. We're to be set apart, and we're to hopefully set an example that might draw them to him through seeing our example. So it's not us versus them. It's us separate from them, setting the example so they might want to come and join and come out of her, my people, come out of the world, come out of all that nonsense. All right? You know, it's really sad that I actually had a thought, I don't know how many years back it went, but we were pretty much an exclusively white-looking group. And I really was excited when we started getting some other color mixed in here, only because the world needs to see that. Sadly, the world needs to see that. They shouldn't need to see that, but they do. And so we have a lot of various shades of color in the group now, and I think that's to at least show everybody what we all have in common is what matters, which is we have community under covenant, okay? And we all should be loving each other. It doesn't matter what color. It doesn't matter where you grew up. Doesn't matter what your culture was. Doesn't matter anything. At least it shouldn't. I still know it does in this group. I know it does in every group. There's still those that have that problem. There's still a lot of anti-Semitism out there underlying all of this in a lot of people. And it's very, very real. And it needs to get fixed. None of that will go in the kingdom. That will not fly in the kingdom. Look, one of the saddest moments for me was I had a gentleman I was working with, and I thought he was a pretty good teacher and had a lot of potential, and he was black, just to point it out. I mean, you know, I joke because, like I said last week, I said when Elder mentioned he was black, I said, why didn't you tell me? I didn't know. Because I don't pay it. Like, that's not an issue for me, you know? And when this gentleman said the people he's trying to work with, I guess certain segments of the black community, would not listen to him because his vertical person above him was white. And I said, that's a teaching opportunity. Let you and me do a video and show people how stupid that is. Why are you feeding into that? Well, they won't even listen to me because you're my above me. Why are you feeding into that? Okay? I have to be really clear. I absolutely am not in this position because of the color of my skin. Okay? I'm in this position because of what he puts in my mouth. Okay? It's not my fault or my benefit that my skin is this color. But yet I had a gentleman say he couldn't work with me because my skin color. And I'm like, I was like, that is so stupid. Beyond stupid, you know? You know why Elder is who he is in my relationship? Because of what he can do. Not because of whatever his color of skin is. Okay? I didn't pick Rabbi Tom because he was white. I picked Rabbi Tom because he's Rabbi Tom. Because of the skills he brings. I didn't pick Elder because he's black. And we have to not allow us, we cannot as a body get trapped into and sucked into any of that. Okay? Ever. Now, believe it or not, I do have problems with people. And some of them are white, and some of them are black, some of them are yellow, but that's because of the stupidity they're doing as people. Not because of anything else, like literally the dumb things they're doing. But not because of what cultural color, whatever background they have. Okay? If you come to me, whatever color you are, whatever background, whatever, and I give you guidance and you don't do it, I'm going to have a problem with you no matter what those other things are. Now, you may say, oh, well, you're just being racist. No, I would do that to anybody no matter what they look like. Elder will tell you, we've had every shape, size, color, and everything come through the counseling room, and he will tell you, I treat everybody the same. All right? And so does he. All right? And we have to be that. Because I'm going to tell you right now, Hasatan is never going to relent on trying to find ways to divide. Okay? There will never be a time where there will not be an effort to cause an us versus them. There will never be a time where there won't be looking down on a group of people for whatever category you want to put them in. And we need to stop that. All right? We cannot do that. We have to be well above and beyond that. Okay? When I look at you, you are a child of the living Elohim trying to walk out your salvation in fear and trembling. Period. Okay? Period. Old, young, male, female, whatever color, whatever background, whatever education level. I mean, we got all these ways we can stop it. So thank you for bringing it up, John. And I don't have a good answer to you as to what to do, except don't get sucked into it. Okay? You know what you want to do? The same thing Yeshua said about the things that are like this. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Now, some of you will say, oh, they know exactly what they're doing. Well, yeah, I know they know what they're doing, but they don't know that it's wrong. They don't know why it's wrong. They don't know what they're doing. Okay? From reality point of view. They know what they think they're doing. And so they may be relishing in their prejudice, but they don't understand why it's wrong and how wrong it is. Like the ones who were basically killing Yeshua. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know they're killing Messiah. They don't know what they're doing. If they did, they wouldn't do it. But they don't. So whenever you run into any of this stuff, you have to simply say to yourself, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And Father, give me the strength not to get drawn into and sucked into that nonsense. Because we cannot do that. Okay, we cannot do that. Period, end of story. You know? Look, I told this story, maybe the story gets to be told here. I was shocked when I went into Worldwide Church of God 1987, okay, 86. Might have been 86. Don't you love when people correct those things that you would never know, it doesn't matter, you know, okay? And they were having what was called the Big Apple Dance, which was a singles event at the end of the year, like an end of the year sort of, you know, because people are off, you know, because of that time of year. And it was like the most formal, fancy dance of the year within our little single circuit within that church. And I'm there. It's my first time. I've only been in the church for 5 minutes, literally a couple of months. I don't know what their rules are. I don't know what they do. I'm at this dance. I'm kind of sitting off to the side, kind of figuring it out. And at the table I was sitting at, there was this black, I didn't pay attention, young lady who nobody asked to dance all night. And it was like they announced there's only going to be one or two more songs. So I asked her, hey, do you want to go dance, all right? Because I figured somebody should ask her to dance. I mean, the only reason I wasn't dancing really because I was kind of watching and figuring things out. And in this particular church, the ladies weren't going to ask you to dance. The guys needed to go over and ask. So I did, and she got up, and we started to dance. And the pastor, who also happened to be black, brought me off to the side after I danced with her and told me, we don't do that. I said, what? I said, I had no idea that was in this place. And he basically scolded me and corrected me for that interracial dancing. And I was just appalled, really, that I was getting. And plus, it's not even like I was interested in her, because it was. I just was compassionately asking her to dance. Okay? It wasn't like we were going to get married next week, and even that should have been fine. Because it would be a man and a woman, no matter what the skin color, who's getting married. So what, you know. And I'm thinking, even in this place that was a supposedly Torah-submitted, Torah-observing church, Saturday, you know, the feast days, kashrut, tithe, you know, everything, all three tithes, the whole whatnot. But the racism was there. Okay? And it was worse than even that. He would even get in the face of black people from Africa is different than black people from the islands. And they couldn't even though their skin color was the same. I was like, you're nuts. This is incredibly insane. No shock that eventually a few years later, he ended up bringing his whole group off back to Sunday and just being a problem. That got him out of the mix. Okay? But just so you know, I've experienced all this stuff is what I'm saying, John, okay? And I don't have any tolerance for it, all right? None whatsoever. And we should, none of us should, okay? None of us should have any, do not ever get sucked into that. And I'm saying any category of prejudice for whatever reason, okay? Never look down on anybody, okay? Never point the finger and blame others. It's them. Those people. Okay. Other people pointing you saying you're part of those. You're being in this, you're getting pointed at. You're in that cult. You're one of those people. Okay. And you don't like it when that happens to you. Why would you ever do that to anybody else? Okay. Why would you ever do that? Do not do that. All right. Go ahead.
I know when I was raised to that, someone says, when you're pointing one finger, look at your fingers, you have three or four pointing back at you.
That's right. But it's not even so much about the pointing the finger and those pointing back at you. It's about blame. Own, you know, that the things in your life are not other people's fault. We blame the government. We blame the economy. We blame this race. We blame that culture. We blame these people. We blame this. Stop blaming. Because no matter what's happening in the world, some people are still thriving. They figured out how to do it. And you know what they all did in common? They're not blaming. They're just doing something. Instead of blaming, they figured out to try to do something. That's the key. All right, anything else, John?
Nope, you pretty much answered it. Thank you.
Good. Look, I like that he brought that up because you know what? This is one of those topics nobody likes to talk about, nobody wants to bring up, and it's very real and very important, and it's not going away. All right? It is not going away, but it has to go away out of the group. The world isn't going to stop, but we must, okay? So I want you to examine yourself and wonder, am I avoiding anybody for a reason? Like, their skin color, their age, maybe their weight, maybe their something, maybe their, I don't know, whatever, the way they dress. I don't care what it is. Are you avoiding anybody for any other reason except for their actual, what they do? In other words, I do avoid some people because they act in a way that I should not be acting, right? But within the body, do you find yourself avoiding people for these worldly reasons of prejudice, whatever that may be? And it doesn't have to just be skin color. And examine yourself and check that and fix that, all right? Well, I don't like to hang out with those people. Oh, that's already a problem. You say those people? Okay? They're people. Otherwise, people just point the finger at you, same thing, and you're part of some other group called those people. To somebody, you're those people. Okay? Whatever that means. It means some group you don't like for whatever reason. Okay? Anyway, Chantel.
So I have 365 questions from Mercy Smith. I'm going to try to group these together. There are only five, but I'm going to try to... I'll get back in line.
Okay.
So the first one is...
See, I see how you are, Mercy. You're not here. You don't want to wait till the stream next month because you'll be back already, so you'll have missed it. So you're going to get Chantel to ask you a question.
Yeah.
That was slick. Very good. All right.
So the first one is, this is a big idea with several tenet questions attached. I have watched the Father and the Son teaching, and perhaps I may need to rewatch since it's been a minute and have this question or questions. Number one, how should we view Yeshua properly? And I'm going to do the next one as well. Do we just pray in his name? What if we don't? Is that wrong?
Okay, so... Without Mercy here, I can't really ask her the question I want to ask.
Like, because there's five to follow.
That's fine. But just understand that when you say pray in his name, do you actually have to mention his name? And the answer is no. Okay, praying in his name doesn't mean that you actually use his name. It's praying under the authority that he has given. Okay? Next question.
So the first one was, how should we view Yeshua properly?
Yeah.
Did you answer that one?
No, because I have no idea what she meant by that. Properly, I need more context as to what she's talking about.
So the next one was, the major religions have such strong beliefs and disbeliefs about him. The Jews don't believe he's Messiah or really think of him at all. So does that mean they will believe the anti-Messiah is Messiah, since the anti-Messiah will build the third temple?
I don't actually know that it says the anti-Messiah will build the third temple. It does say that the anti-Messiah needs a third temple to sit on the Holy of Holies. So I don't have him building the third temple. But he will then show up in the holy place and like the abomination of desolation that we see happening with Daniel. With Daniel. So I don't see it that way. But when it comes to... read the questions one more time to make sure I get the rest of it.
Does it mean they will believe the anti-Messiah is Messiah?
Okay, so look, there's a reason why each of the different factions of the world believe or don't believe him, okay? Really, the only ones who believe he's the Messiah in the correct full context are those whose bubbles were popped. In other words, we have the verse that says the Father has to reveal, has to draw you to. Now, Christians have an understanding of Messiah that's not accurate fully to what the book says. And Judah has an understanding of Messiah, which also is not fully accurate to what the book says. Each having Messiah molded somewhat to the image that fits their needs or their way of wanting things to be. All right? And so that is part of the problem. By the way, not all Jews reject him. They just don't necessarily accept him as Messiah. There's a lot of Jews that will actually respectfully accept that he was a prophet at the time and brought some very interesting and important dialogue to the Jewish community. I mean, I have a really good annotated New Testament written, the annotations are all written by Jewish authors, writers, scholars, not Jewish scholars, because from a religious point of view, but these are literary people who all agree that we should be looking at what this person said in the time that he said it, because it was important things that the Jewish community may have marginalized because they didn't want to see him as Messiah. All right? Not to mention that the early Christian world used him as a weapon of anti-Semitism, okay, to basically wipe out the Jews, or at least try to in many ways. So that would make him a little bit of a pill to swallow to accept him as anything, all right? And so we have a lot of that issue going on. So when we say, well, who would accept the anti-Messiah? What is going to be the primary factor in people accepting the anti-Messiah? What do you think would be the primary factor in people accepting the anti-Messiah? I'll give you the answer without asking you. How much he's going to provide what you want? Mm-hmm. Okay? Which means Jew, Gentile, anybody has an opportunity to maybe buy into this anti-Messiah. The more you are suffering and want, and that anti-Messiah seems to be the answer and cure to what you want. Because he's going to appear to come and fix everything for everybody before it gets terrible once he has control over everything. Because he has to appear Messiah-like. All right? And so if he does things the way the Jews expect, if he does things that also the way Christians expect, if he does things that matches up enough with everybody, he's going to get a lot of everybody's to follow him. That's going to be the factor. I mean, you have to understand, the world doesn't just buy into him for no reason. They buy into him because he's giving them what the world has, what Hasatan and others have set up to make you want, need, desire. And he's going to look like he's giving you all that. He's going to solve famines. He's going to solve disease. He's going to solve, all these things are going to seem to have been fixed. It's going to seem utopic until the stranglehold comes around your neck. Okay? But up to that point, he's going to seem to be what everybody wants him to be, as opposed to what he is. Okay? We all have a certain idea. Look, this is essentially, if you're going to buy into the New Testament, this is what Judas's problem was. Yeshua was not behaving like he wanted him to be as Messiah. As a zealot, he wanted him to be a military King David-type figure, Moses-type figure, to overthrow Rome and set them free, so to speak. And when he wasn't, when it was clear that wasn't what he was going to do, that was the problem. Okay? You don't get to mold him into your image. But he's going to mold himself into everybody's image enough to convince. The false one will. Talk about the ultimate ear tickling. So it says even the elect might be deceived because he's going to do the things that will convince you he is. And if you don't know what to look for, you will be fooled. So I did the teaching, Beware False Prophets. It's a big part of understanding that. Matter of fact, my daughter asked me today, since it's been so long, if I would redo it. I did it at another congregation as a guest speaker, and the lighting was terrible, and a lot of the things were no good. So we can do it here with better lighting and everything like that. Maybe at a feast one time, we can maybe really do a better job with it. It's been over 8 years, so we might just go ahead and do that at some point. Okay? But you got to remember, this is in the Beware False Prophets teaching. You cannot believe that anybody's going to believe this anti-Messiah is Messiah unless he actually does things that convince you he's Messiah. He has to do things that are going to just really win people over. The world's going to get really terrible, and this figure is going to come in and appear to fix everything. I don't know what that's going to look like. Clearly, it's going to look in some manner, like in some form that's going to please the Jews. Or the Jews aren't going to believe him. And some matter that's going to work for the Christians, or they're not going to believe him. I mean, it's going to work for a lot of these major groups that believe in that particular Messiah. Even the Muslims have a Messiah understanding in their writings, okay, to whatever degree. And so you're going to have a figure that meets all of this. And that's where we really have the issue. You know, we have to understand. It says, if possible, even the elect would be deceived. How would you be deceived? Because he's got to do all the things you're hoping for in some form. Not all the things he said he's going to do, but what you're hoping he'll do. All the things you've always wanted God to do. And so then those signs and wonders are going to build belief that this guy is it when he's not. And so that's what we need to be ready for and aware of, okay?
Okay, this is the last bit. The Christians believe he is everything and worship him. The Muslims a prophet. So how should we view him properly? Is Jewish thought so wrong if we can twist scripture to confirm some guy's rooster is the Messiah?
All right. Okay, this is a question that really needs a much more of a whole teaching to deal with. Look, the bottom line is this, okay? I'm just going to be straight with all of you. And I've answered some of you that struggle with this before. This is going to sound like a lame answer to some degree, but you need to understand where faith comes in. Okay? Everything that Jews and Christians believe is based on faith. Why? Because we have a book. We don't have any originals. We have a book. We have those writings. These writings are not that old in terms of the copies that we have. And we're supposed to believe this is talking about the creator of the universe and the Messiah and all these other things. We do have some archaeological stuff that backs it up. There's other things that we find that backs up some of the things that these books say. But we don't have except a lot of claims by a lot of people. So where does faith come in? Where does your experience come in? Where does your interaction with whatever is the creative force over the universe? Faith is needed. Of course, the Jews will claim, well, we all heard him as a nation at Sinai. Nobody's been, we don't have any record of that from a person that was actually there. We have the writing from way later that it happened. Okay? Of course, Moses claimed to write it all down and that copy was in the ark. Go find me the ark where the writings are. Okay? We don't have any of this stuff. That doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that all of this is going to take a level of faith. Which is why I think Paul, who nobody likes, which is fine, in his brilliance, and I think this is brilliant, if nothing else, when he said, look, we all have our own journey. We all have to walk out, whatever that is, ourselves. And so I'm not going to tell you what to believe or not to believe. You're going to have to walk out your own journey. That journey may take you away from the Messiah just into the Old Testament. It may take you out of everything. It may take you right back. That was my journey, okay? But I can tell you that you can't get around the faith aspect of the journey, okay? Whatever is out there that runs everything isn't directly interacting with people. I don't care how many voices you think you hear, okay? We're working on a faith-based thing, okay? Now, we have this writing. You know what? Every group has their writings. The Hindus have their writings. The Buddhists have their writings. The Taoists have their writings. I mean, everybody's got writings. The Muslims have their writings. So how do you know which writings are right? It's a personal journey, okay? It's an absolute personal journey. Are the writings all jacked up? You bet they're all jacked up. You know why? Man has handled them. Okay? Man has handled them. And I don't care if you want to go back to the oldest codexes. Those codexes are not originals. All right? We don't have originals. Okay, what Isaiah wrote, we don't have. Okay, Qumran, they found a copy of the scroll that was a copy of a scroll. Okay? We don't know what we don't know. So what do you have to do? You have to take it on faith. What I can tell you is this, though, and this is for Mercy and all the rest of you. I can only speak for myself and tell you, I know, and you should also know, at least this part, what your life was before. Okay? It's not that hard. You just got to think back. You can remember what your life was before. And then you came into this thing called belief, and you saw change. And now life is different. And there should be a reasonably stark contrast. Now, I've had the the blessing or the curse of seeing that contrast several times. Okay? Because I came into belief in my 20s, knew what life was like without it, saw a change in my life with it, then journeyed out, because that church I happened to go to turned out to be a big, giant mess. And then went back into the world. And saw, again, consistently, life worked just as bad the second time as it did the first time. Okay. Then I came into belief and was drawn back in. And guess what? Life got better again. Like it did the first time I went back, that I came into it. And then questions like these questions led me down a whole spiraling rabbit hole into nothing. Okay? and I was back with nothing. And by the way, just so you know, I don't understand the idiocy of those who, if they had faith and they believed in this stuff, they believed in Torah, and then at some point they no longer believe that, why would you go to like Christmas and Easter and stuff you already knew was wrong? You already know. I mean, because people would ask me those questions. Well, like when you went out of the, you know, the Torah, whatever, when you left the whole, did you go and do all these things? No, I didn't. Okay? Why would I go do, just because I wasn't sure that I could defend this was right, didn't mean that I didn't already know certain things were wrong. Okay? Not wrong because this said so, just wrong because I know the source of where they are. They admit where they're from. They know what they are. Why would I go there? And that journey was from 2003 to 2010. And after that completion of the 7 years, 7 years is a good solid number of completion. 8 year is the eighth year is the new beginnings. He called me back to this. And guess what? Once again, life worked, it made sense, and all the other things that I noticed the previous two times. I don't recommend doing this roller coaster. Okay, it's awful. But I'm telling you from me, and you probably can verify it from you, that, you know what, regardless of faith or not, I can tell you my experience is that this works. Okay? And the relationship that I believe it gives me with the powers of the universe, the power of the universe, okay? And I'm not just saying like, well, hey, you know, it worked once. No, the same result each time. Okay, being in the world got the same result. Being in belief got the same result. Shocking, right? Okay? Because look, I can't prove to you that this is not a bunch of BS. I can't. And you're never going to hear anybody at a microphone even say those words. This is the inerrant perfect word from it. No, it's not. Originally, it might have been. In other words, if we have an original, I think it would be the inerrant perfect word. We don't have the original. Don't think man was perfect in its, you know, keeping copies of this. Certainly not. That's why there's not a single translation out there that you love and think is perfect. There's ones you prefer. I mean, I'm ready to write my own because I'm really frustrated more and more with some of the things in the ISR, even though I still think it's better than most. Okay? But I'm here to tell you the truth and only the truth. Okay? The truth is, this does take faith. But then again, any belief system's going to take faith. You can't get around it. If there is a God, if there's an authority of the universe, nobody's interacting directly with that being, like face-to-face in conversation at this time. So believing in and understanding that relationship takes faith, no matter what system you're in. Because it's not a being that you get to hang out with like a human being. He's bigger than everything. He's in everything around. Whatever way you understand, I mean, look, we're like the amoeba trying to understand a human being, okay? How do we understand something that big, that outside of time and space, that always exists, whatever, okay? How do we understand that? We can't. We're too finite in the limited number of dimensions we function in to understand something that's outside of all of that and bigger and beyond. So guess what it takes? Faith. Okay? But what if we're wrong? Look, let me help you with that. Do you believe... See, we're getting into some stuff here, right? Do you believe there's a higher power? Mm-hmm. Okay? Whatever it is, you believe there's a higher power. Do you believe that higher power is in control?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a higher power in control. So that means that the higher power has either caused or allowed. Can we agree?
Yes.
So then if this is where you are, this is where he's either caused you or allowed you to be. So even if this turns out to not be exactly the right thing, but this is what he's caused or allowed you to understand him through. Can we agree to that?
Amen.
Okay? So don't feel like you're going to be in all kinds of trouble. What he wants you to do, what I guess I'm guessing here, is he wants you to make the effort to try to understand him however you can. And not just go into whatever you always just raised with necessarily, but you personally seeking that relationship. okay? That's the best you can do. I feel totally comfortable if I die tomorrow, I've made the effort, and he'll look down and say, well, you did the best you could with what I gave you. He didn't give me, I wasn't born in India, so I wasn't given Hinduism or Buddhism or whatever. I wasn't born in, you know, Asia and given Taoism or something. I was born here and this is what I was given. Does that make all of them right also? No. Does it make this one right? No. Doesn't make anything. It's our job to try to figure out how to have a relationship with the creator of the universe. Because I believe the evidence is clear that this is a created space. Which means that someone had to create it, or something. A being had to create. This is intelligent design. It was done not by accident and spontaneous coming together of chemistry. And so you need to figure out you in the context of whatever that is. This is man's effort, at least one of the efforts, to do that. Okay? Either you believe it or you don't. I don't know how else to explain this to you. Nobody's going to ever talk like that for me. They're going to say, this is it. Listen, I'm telling you, lack of anything else, and I've searched everything. I've studied all those other religions just to look through them when I was on my 7-year journey. This is what I believe I'm supposed to be doing. Okay? And look, if nothing else, okay? And I don't know about other guys who get in front of microphones. I could just tell you with me, I think one of the reasons why you get so much out of what I say is because you know I believe what I'm saying, okay? Now, I say that to tell you that that's why I didn't teach for 7 years, because I could not, with strength of conviction, teach what I had such a weak understanding of how real this foundation is. Because you start reading the New Testament and start doing some, there's some jacked up things in there that you can tell man's messed with. By the way, the Old Testament has just as many problems. A little bit different, but similar. Because man has messed with this book from the beginning. Jews messed with it for their reasons. The early church fathers for their reasons. Okay? But I speak to you out of my life, what I believe is real. And I believe this book is the source of that information. And I teach it to you the best that he's given me, what I believe he's given me, because I give you understanding in here that I would never be able to understand if he hadn't given it to me. The insight that he gives, that I get, are downloads. I mean, they're just like things I didn't know until he put it in my head. It's not like I just read it and go, okay, obviously that's what it means. No. It's the need to piece it together. I believe whatever that higher power is giving me the insight to do that. And this is the book that's doing that, right? And so that's the best answer I can give you. Hopefully some of you are nodding yes and no. Maybe that helps you, maybe it doesn't. I don't know, okay? But I'm not going to give you the, well, absolute. I haven't had lunch with any of them. Abraham did, according to the book. I didn't, okay? I've not had a face-to-face that way. None of you have either. I know some people say, oh, I had a dream or I had this. Listen, you haven't had the face-to-face. Okay? And so, this is what it is. Now, if we're going to be using this book as a source, we have to understand that this book was written to be instructed by anointed, insightful beings that he's given that insight to, and not understood just by you, by yourself. Okay? At least not fully. I'm not saying you can't understand any of it. I'm not saying you're an idiot. Okay? I mean, some of it absolutely everybody can understand. It's very simple and straightforward. There are pieces of it, though, a percentage of it, that was intentionally written in different type of language than the simple straightforward. Okay? So I'll give you one of those things. Somebody asked this morning, so the elder had mentioned it, so I'll give you guys this little nugget, and realize this is the kind of stuff that you miss at a Zoom meeting. But one of the guys asked a question about, what about in Matthew where the graves opened and all these people came out of the graves and, you know, was seen by many? And my first answer is, I am never comfortable with anything that appears in one place. Okay? And that only appears in one place. None of the other gospels mention that. All right? That's one place. Now, secondly, it seems to be problematic for everything the rest of Scripture teaches, which is that we die, we sleep, and we await a resurrection. So there's a problem with that. The insight I got this morning was, wait a minute. Because the question also had to do with the verse in Timothy where it talks about that he went to speak to those in prison. Okay? So where's the prison? See, prison from a Catholic point of view is like this purgatory or hell or something. But that's not scriptural. You know who's in prison? The dispersed. They're in prison. Because remember, the whole point Messiah said when he came was to bring back those scattered. Something the prophets had all talked about. And what did Paul say? Again, I like some of the things that Paul says. He said, you were all dead in trespasses. So now when Messiah made you alive, aren't you coming out of the grave? Many were now alive. In other words, walking around with bubbles popped and going around talking to people. And they had been dead before. Not literally. Because let me tell you something. There were writers in those days, guys like Josephus, Philo. Not a single one of them talked about the greatest event in the history of anybody, graves opening up and people walking around in bodies. Not in rags and bones and ugly, like just normal people, like all of a sudden walking around. Because nobody said these people walking around look scary and like with skin hanging off of them or whatever. Okay, imagine they've been dead for however long. They weren't like out of a Michael Jackson video. You know. Okay? I mean, so why isn't it mentioned by anybody? Because again, if you go back to the parable language, where the point was that after Messiah resurrected, a lot of people had bubbles popped. And all of a sudden, they're getting it. It's almost like, and I didn't say this morning, so you're getting a little extra bit now. It's kind of like the 70, when the anointing on Moses goes on to the 70, and they start prophesying. So it's like the anointing of Yeshua went on a whole bunch of people and they started walking around in a whole different way. Basically, like they came out of death into life. Does that make a little bit of sense? Okay. But again, you can clap for that. But I've been doing this 25 years, never had that thought about it. I just didn't like that it was in Matthew because I didn't know what to do with it because it made no sense, matched nothing, wasn't said by anybody else, not said by anybody historic. So I didn't know what to do with it. So today he decided to say, hey, you were already talking about parables a little bit. What about this matching up with that? That it's not literal prison, it's not literal graves, and these people aren't literally all of a sudden alive who are literally dead. Because that undermines the whole plan that we're all waiting. Look, and I guess maybe you don't like the book of Hebrews, but in Hebrews it says, you know, in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11, that all these died having not received yet the promises, which means that nobody resurrected yet. Okay? Now, yes, you could talk about Lazarus. Lazarus was dead for a couple of days and brought back. That's not the same thing. That was a healing miracle that Yeshua would, okay, fine. All right? But we're not talking about like mass grave exodus that we're hearing about in Matthew. I mean, that's a whole different, whole different problem. Because apparently these people are in a cemetery, been dead for a while. That's a whole different problem. And so that's the kind of insight you might get if you want to believe that I'm anointed and he gave me an insight. And now all of a sudden something might make a lot more sense. Because you have to remember, this book was written very much in two ways. One is on the Peshat, literal, but a lot of it is not Peshat at all. If you talk to the Jews, okay, I want to bring them into this, from a Kabbalistic point of view, none of it was written literally. Not that it didn't happen, but it was never to be interpreted. The message was never from the literal. The Kabbalist will read you the Torah portions and tell you, stop looking at the literal events. Look what it's trying to teach you. That's when you start reading. Now, I'm not telling you to go read a Kabbalah, but I'm saying the Kabbalist is going to tell you that. That none of it is to be taken at face value because it's all hidden, hinted at remez, allegorical drash, or sowed hidden stuff. Not that the flood didn't happen. Not that these things didn't happen. He said, but don't be distracted by thinking about what happened. There's something more going on here. Okay? And so Yeshua says it when they ask him, you know, why are you talking parables? Yahweh in the Old Testament says that he speaks to them in parables so that they don't know. And you're like, why would he tell us stuff so we don't know? Because he wants to reveal it when he wants through who he wants. Okay? He doesn't want you just to read it and it's just there. I don't know why. That's his choice, not mine. All right? Does that make sense now for everybody a little better? All right, Jonathan.
I had a quick question that had to get upgraded to you. So is it okay to either donate or sell plasma?
Okay. Yes. All right. Look, don't think for a second that the life is in the blood means that you cannot receive a blood transfusion or donate blood and that kind of thing. And plasma, of course, is a little bit different as far as the donation, because we're talking about eating blood. That's the scriptural problem, the eating of blood. And so we're not going to do that, okay? Now, in my case, I did have a situation where I had surgery one time. I knew the surgery was coming up, and they asked me to donate blood for myself. And so that's something you could always do if you'd rather get your own blood. Of course, they don't guarantee that if emergency comes up, somebody else won't get it, you know, between when you give it and when you have your surgery. So they say, we'll try to give you your blood, but you'll get whatever you're going to get, okay, if something else came up and they needed it. And in my case, that could have happened because I have a fairly rare blood. So they would have been very happy to take mine because I think I'm a B minus, okay? So, right? They want that one, okay? That's not like you're one that, like, hey, everybody's got that one, okay? So, and of course, my friends used to tease me that, you know, I always knew you were a B minus. You weren't an A, you know? But it's like only 2% of the population or something have that. So it's fairly, you know, needed. So it was possible, certainly, that somebody might have needed that, and they would have given it to them waiting on me. But also, because so few people need it, it was also possible it would have been there for me because it's not that popular. So you have kind of both things going on. All right, Selena.
This is Sarah Beth's question, but I may have a follow-up.
Sneaky Beshalomers.
I may have a follow-up because it upset me. Okay, not really, but okay. So Shemot 22:22-24, if they, the widow and the orphans, cry out, Abba will intervene on their behalf. So if we don't cry out when we need to, he doesn't necessarily give us the deliverance or help. We are like the pump on the well. If we don't press the handle, the water doesn't come out. Is this a correct application of this verse to our lives?
No. All right, next question. No, I'm kidding. All right. Okay. Look, and one of the things I talked about this morning is for all of you, you have to really bring context into it, all right? What is context? Who's talking? Who's the audience? In this case, obviously, it's Yahweh through Moses talking to the Israelites and giving them Torah instruction, right? This is right after they got the commandments, the Ten Commandments. Now, that being said, though, what's the issue that's actually being addressed? He's saying in verse 22, do not afflict any widow or fatherless child. And he's warning them, if you do, I'm going to hear the cries that you're going to cause by inflicting, you know, whatever suffering you do on them. Okay, so it's not like they have to cry out. He's saying, be warned, if you hurt one of these, I will know. Does that make sense? Not that you, I'm not going to do anything unless they cry. He says, don't afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you do afflict them at all, if they cry out to me at all, in other words, if you hurt them and you make them cry, he said, I shall certainly hear their cry and my wrath shall burn and I shall slay you with a sword. Not that, you know, so you think, what, I'm going to hold my hand over their mouth so they can't cry? I mean, he's saying if you hurt them and cause them to suffer, I will know. And if anything we should get out of the Tanakh is he has a very elevated, you know, desire that we treat widows, orphans, fatherless, etc., those who are afflicted in that way with a lot of compassion. Now, he very, very much wants us to protect those particular ones. New Testament, too, we see it being said, look, true religion is to deal with these people, to go and visit those that are in this kind of a condition, to help and bless those. That's why he created the third tithe, just to handle that, okay? And so, no, we are not the pump handle that we have to cry out. Okay, he's saying, be warned. If you do this, I'm going to handle it and you're not going to like it. Don't you hurt these people. Okay, does that make sense?
Okay, yes. So my follow-up question is, you know, when I read what she asked, and I know you know probably what she's asking better, it was like, I struggle so much asking for help. I did good this week. I feel like when I asked you for help this week, that was pretty quick. But the last time I asked for help, it had gone on for like 2 months, and I should have, because you fixed it. I mean,
right.
It was a thing I'd been working on, but you wrapped it up in a nice little bow, and it's been so much better. So.
Okay, I understand what you're asking. Okay, look. Okay, again, this is one of those things that he just gives me so I can understand. You have to separate the difference between if I cause you harm, okay? It's not about whether he helps you or not necessarily. It's what he's going to do to me. That's what he's talking about here. You, on the other hand, he may or may not provide anything for if you don't ask for help when help's available. Do you see the difference? Okay, so if you are harmed, he's warning and says, my wrath will burn and I shall slay you with the sword and your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. He said, I'm going to punish the one doing the harm, but as far as blessing the one being harmed, he's saying, I will hear their cries. That part you need to cry out for. You need help. You need to ask for it. Okay, he needs you to learn to use the structure that you have. And you've experienced, and you just quoted that. Recently you came and got help and it helped.
Yes.
Okay, and he wants you to learn that so that you experience that so that you keep going back and getting more. So there's two different issues happening here. Mostly what he's talking about here is, hey, be warned, if you do this, you're going to pay for it. I'm going to know. For the other side of it that you're asking, hey, you're going to be suffering in life, maybe you need to ask for help. Okay, I'm not just going to fix it just because you're upset. There's a structure for it. I got to go back to something I've told you a lot lately. He's not going to do what you need to do. So you may need help, but if there's a way for you to get it, he's not just going to give it to you. You have to go get it. Okay? That's the difference. Now, if we're talking about babies crying, there's nobody to help them. He's going to hear that cry. If there is no way for them to get help otherwise. But for you, as long as there's a path that you can take, he's going to want you to go and make the effort to take that path to get the help you need. Okay? So all of you that should be calling leadership, he's not going to help you until you do it. If that's what you're supposed to do. All right, anything else?
No.
That was it?
Okay,
good. Okay, Marlene, who are you asking on behalf of?
Deirdre.
Really?
Yes.
See, I knew it! I knew it. I knew it.
Because I see you all the time. I don't have to get up here.
Yep. It's like the daughters on parade all calling in. Sarah Beth and Deirdre. Okay.
I almost answered her and say, you know, you live in town.
Yep.
You can just, you know. I mean, not like she goes to work every day. Anyway, I'm sorry.
All right. Next zone one, Beth Shalom. We're going to make all those calling in go last. Because if you're not here, you don't get to go first. Okay, so we got a bunch of you. I'm already going to allow this now. But next time, be warned, all of you, you could always call in for your own counseling, or you could get at the end of the line if there's room for you at the end. But I'm not going to make the people that are here asking for themselves wait on you. That's not appropriate. All right, go ahead.
We are all familiar with physical disabilities, mental disabilities, emotional disabilities, etc. Is there such a thing as spiritual disability, and what might that look like?
I'm going to say no to that, because anything that's going to hamper your spiritual is going to be one of those other things, especially emotional and, you know, type of a disability. Because the spiritual side is something that just requires you to make the effort to connect. And if you have an emotion blocking you from that because you're emotionally disabled, that could be the problem. I don't know that there's a spiritual disability. I think you could certainly have things happen because your spiritual side is suffering from your focusing on it properly and you're not where you need to be in your spiritual side. But I wouldn't call that a disability because to me a disability is a handicap that makes it either very hard or impossible for you to do something. Okay? So if you have a hearing impairment, it means it's very difficult or impossible for you to hear. If you've got a visual impairment, it's very hard or impossible. If you've got a physical part of your body that doesn't work right, it makes it very difficult or impossible to do certain things. I can't imagine anything that does that spiritually, except some of your other handicaps. I mean, when I talk about especially like emotional, could affect your motivation, desire, and drive to do the things you need to spiritually. So it is possible that your spiritual life is handicapped because of another handicap. All right? But it's not because you are spiritually handicapped. He didn't call you because there's anything spiritually you can't do. All right? That's just part of the system that he puts in place. He's not going to call you unless you can do it. All right, Melissa?